I am a developer advocate at Altinity. We do hosting services and support for ClickHouse. So if what I'm talking about to you is interesting, come talk to me, follow me on LinkedIn, or come talk to us at our booth in building UA across the courtyard. Let's dive in. Today we're going to talk about observability in one, or Ollie in one, as I like to say, and using ClickHouse as a unified database for all of our telemetry signals. Okay, so I spent most of 2022 and 2023 really talking about OpenTelemetry both publicly and internally at my employer. And usually I start with a diagram that looks something like this. It's very familiar, I'm sure, to all of you from like the OpenTelemetry documentation or just any blog post that you've read about OpenTelemetry. And the simplicity of this diagram is really useful for explaining the architecture of OpenTelemetry to someone who's never encountered it before. But it is very misleading and it misrepresents the complexity of how we're actually using OpenTelemetry in our real-world applications, right? So one of the things that's on, you know, sort of proudly placed on the OpenTelemetry website so as to not, I think, you know, compete with the vendors that are supporting OpenTelemetry, the OpenTelemetry project does not include any kind of database or backend UI. That's sort of just up to you, right? And then we also have this piece of information from the Grafana State of Observability Report. Thank you, Grafana folks. Six is a typical number of observability tools that an organization will have deployed in production, right? And I don't mean like Fortune 100 organizations here. I mean any organization. So what I think we actually need, if we kind of take that first graph that we were looking at and actually just reverse it, we get something that looks more like how we actually would want to think about observability in the real world. All the way there on my right, on your left, we have some of my favorite sources of telemetry data. You're probably using some combination of all of those today in your organization. We then need to consolidate, right? We want to take that and in order to process that information and correlate it correctly in the way that we want, build the topologies that we want, build the dependency graphs that we want, we need some way to combine all of that information, and then ultimately we need to store it so that we can use it for things like alerting and dashboards and analysis. So I think this diagram is more realistic than the one that we just had. And there are more challenges, right? If we're splitting up our telemetry data, now technically you could build a unified observability solution with a separate database for each signal, but you might not want to, right? But if you don't have that unified, without that unified interface, right, without one way to view all of your data, when you have to go to different tools for your different types of data, different signals from different sources, you run into problems, right? We're all very, very smart and good at our jobs, but the more times you have to, like, correlate an ID from one tool to an ID from another tool and like basically do all of the joins in your head, just every single one of those little points of friction is a chance to make a mistake when you're in a really stressful scenario trying to respond to a production outage, right? And it's like we can't afford mistakes. So ideally we should be reducing all of the opportunities for mistakes, and instead we don't, right? Like we have this like setup where we need 8 different monitors to respond to a production incident. It's kind of crazy. We got a lot of haystacks to look through, right? But when we look at what actually goes into those haystacks, right? Like what are we actually storing in our telemetry databases? Of course it's the signals, right? It's the metrics, traces, and logs, soon profiles and events, right? OpenTelemetry is adding more signal types. It's not 3 pillars, and that's awesome. We need all of these different data formats to structure the data in the way that's useful and compressible for the questions we're trying to answer. So that's gonna be the bulk of your data. And that's going to be the bulk of your queries. But there's more stuff than just that, right? We also need the resource metadata. Resource metadata, resources, for those not familiar with the OpenTelemetry terminology, it's really just the metadata that describes the entities, right? So the node that the process is running on, the process, things like that. Maybe the EC2 region that the node is in, right? Things like that would all go in your resource metadata. And all of that information is useful because it allows us to tie together, right, those telemetry signals and contextualize them and make sense of them and what they actually relate to. Then from all of those relationships, we can actually create graphs and topologies of, right, we can create dependency topologies, we can create topologies like James showed two presentations ago that show sort of the entire architecture of our application. These are really, really useful. At scale, right, when we talk about really, really large organizations, one of the hardest challenges is just zeroing in on the data that you care about. And it turns out that if you have a topology as sort of the front of your filter, that's a really good way to filter down to the specific data that you care about. Of course, if we have graphs and topologies, those are kind of expensive to calculate. So we're going to want to store them and maybe hang on to them for a certain period of time. So we're going to have some kind of snapshots. If we have snapshots, it makes sense that we might have some concept of deltas in order to efficiently store changes in those snapshots. And then finally, right, of course, we need configuration. We need users. We need the dashboards, all the stuff that actually is probably fine in like a traditional OLTB database. Whereas, you know, if you're trying to use an OLTB database for these other things, you're going to run into some scaling problems. You're going to run into some performance problems. Okay, so we can't use OLTP. Is there a silver bullet? Is there something we can use? Well, no. If there was a silver bullet, right, like Honeycomb wouldn't have to build the custom storage engine that they have for their really cool high cardinality stuff. We need all of these things, right? We need the ability to do full text search. That's really important for logs. We need really efficient compression. That's important for everything, but especially for logs and metrics, right? We need to be able to, the ability to query in real time, more or less, and get real time analytics on the data as it's coming in. We need to be able to alert quickly, like on the order of seconds, not minutes or hours, on any variations in that data. We need to be able to relate the data to other parts of the data, and at enterprise scale, right, we're talking about a metric ton of data, right? So we need this solution to be petabyte scale. So while there is no silver bullet, ClickHouse comes pretty darn close to checking all of those boxes. So I think it's a pretty good starting point. So let's talk about ClickHouse. Raise your hand if you are already familiar with ClickHouse or using it. Wow, awesome. Okay. That's not the response I'm used to, but I love it. So ClickHouse, really quickly then, ClickHouse is SQL compatible. It is extremely massively scalable, both horizontally and vertically. And it is really, really, really fast, like sub-second queries on petabytes of data. And ingesting millions of rows per second is absolutely no problem. And it's really, really powerful for observability use cases specifically. And I'm going to talk about why that is and how the architecture of ClickHouse lends itself to observability use cases. So all of that data that we were looking at a couple of slides ago, right, the metrics, traces, logs, profiles, events, all that fun stuff, it follows a worm pattern, write once, read many. It doesn't change, right? A log line is a log line, a trace is a trace. We never need to update it. So we need to write it, store it, hold on to it for a certain amount of time, whatever our retention period policies are, right? And probably query it, read it a ton of times during that lifetime, hopefully. If you're not reading it, then like, why did you collect it? But that's a different question, problem. Eventually it'll get deleted sort of as a part of a bucket, but what we don't ever need to update it along its lifetime. When we think about this kind of data, maybe we think about balanced trees. Balanced trees are really great for really, really quickly reading all of that structured data, but they're really expensive when it comes to like inserting the data because you have to reorder and reorganize everything and rebuild your entire tree every time you do an insert. Not great for tracing data where you're going to be getting 60 spans for one WordPress query. So we have a solution for this. And one solution, this is what Elastic uses, is log structured merge trees. So this is optimized for ingestion, and how we do this is we store key value pairs buffered in memory, right? And we keep these really short little bits of data, and then we can order them. And then once they're sorted and ordered, right, we can flush those to the disk. We can immediately query them and use them as part of our read operations. And in the background, we can compact them, right? So we can make them bigger and bigger, keeping maintaining the order so that the read operations are still really fast and efficient, but also making better use of storage and better use of our nodes and speeding up those reads even further. This is really, really cool. This is a great blog post from Ben Stepford. It goes into more detail on how this works in Elastic specifically. It's a little bit different in ClickHouse. So in ClickHouse, instead of storing key value pairs and compacting them, we're storing entire columns, which if you think about like time series data or you know, basically any type of observability data, this is going to allow us to do the types of reads that we need to do as quickly as possible. There is a way to update and delete in ClickHouse. I'm not going to talk too much about that today, but it's possible if you do need to do that. And then we have the same thing that we saw in Elastic, right? We have these unmerged parts getting compacted into larger and larger parts that can be queried more and more efficiently. This is happening over the course of minutes in the background, right, as the data is inserted. So how does this help us, right? How does this data structure help us do observability better? Well, one thing it gives us, right, we mentioned it makes it very efficient. We get very fast writes because we can just dump whatever data we have straight into memory and then let the nodes sort of figure it out. It's very time friendly, right, because we're ordering the data usually on the time stamp, right, that the telemetry signal came from. This format lends itself to that ordering very well. We get very easy cleanup through TTL policies, again, because everything is ordered by time. We can just drop off an entire one of those partitions and handle our TTL. And since that data is all ordered, it's very compressible, right? And that makes it very cost effective for us. ClickHouse also has some more features that lend itself to observability use cases. I like to say that you can almost build an entire application inside of ClickHouse using all of the features that are available. So we have materialized views. These allow us to transform data from one format into another. You might use these, for example, to take open telemetry spans, or I don't know, take Zipkin spans and cast them to open telemetry spans. It's the same data, right? Just slightly different keys. You can do much more powerful things with that, but that's a pretty common observability type use case. I mentioned we have time to live, so we can, you know, build in the expiration of data, build in policies. We can also migrate data from hot storage to cold storage using things like S3 or other object storage. So we can use that to control our costs as well. We can use this on-premise, so we can keep data, right? Like I was talking to someone yesterday who keeps 10 years of their log data in some cases. I'm sorry, but you definitely don't want to do that with Datadog. So we tiered storage. Okay, and then integrations, right? Like this is SQL compatible, so that just basically opens up the door to integrate with pretty much anything. There's actually two Grafana data source plugins. One is maintained by Altinity, by us. It has some nice little macro helper functions in it to help you create time series data out of stuff that wasn't originally time series data and make it look really nice in your Grafana dashboards. Jaeger, which is a popular trace visualization tool, supports ClickHouse as a backend. Right out of the box, you just have to say, yep, I want to use ClickHouse and give it an instance. There's CLoki, which has actually evolved into Corian, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And there is a Kafka table engine for ClickHouse. So if you're one of those organizations that already has all of your observability data on a Kafka stream, you can just point that Kafka stream at your ClickHouse database and boom, all of your observability data is persisted. So we end up with something that looks kind of like this. Oh, right, there's an OpenTelemetry exporter for ClickHouse, right? So this goes in the collector or in your OpenTelemetry SDKs. It currently supports traces, metrics, and logs. Support for the other signals will be coming soon. And so through that, then we get access to not just like those six, like my favorite things over there, but all of the 90 plus receivers from the OpenTelemetry ecosystem are now available to us as data sources that we can pipe directly into ClickHouse. Cool. Okay, so more benefits. We get excellent compression, even with variable schemas. So we're taking all of these disparate sources. We don't have to know ahead of time what schemas we're dealing with. We don't have to build that into ClickHouse. We can use sort of arbitrary maps and JSON columns, and we can still take advantage of some of the excellent compression and really fast reads that ClickHouse is going to give us. It'll even, like inside a JSON map column, turn those into columnar storage parts. We get practically unlimited cardinality. So Cloudflare gave a great talk at Monadorama last year where they mentioned, it talked about moving from Prometheus to ClickHouse for time series data. Anyone run into cardinality issues in Prometheus? Yeah, okay. No one even wants to raise their hand for that, but I know you all have. Low cardinality in Prometheus, right? Low cardinality, everything's relative. In Prometheus, it means like dozens, maybe scores, right? Okay, in ClickHouse, Low cardinality means millions. So we're talking about completely unrelated orders of magnitude when it comes to cardinality. That's really, really useful too for this sort of arbitrary observability data where we don't necessarily have control over all of it on the front end, right? We're part of an SRE team or some team that's managing all of this data, but there's a ton of other teams generating the data and we can't control what they do. So cardinality is one of those things that's actually really, really hard to control. It's going to drive your costs up with some of those vendor tools. But with ClickHouse, you can kind of worry about it less. Not, you still do have to worry about it, just a lot less. And like I mentioned at the beginning, right, it's extremely horizontally scalable, both for ingestion and for reads. So this is great for observability, because we can scale up to meet our own needs, whatever those may be. There are some challenges, though. It's not perfect. It doesn't solve all of our problems, right? Nothing does. One of the biggest challenges that people run into using ClickHouse for observability is that SQL is not PromQL. And people who spend most of their time dealing with observability data tend to really like PromQL, right? Like, it's a very productive, very terse language for the types of queries that it handles. Asterisk there, because both at Altinity and at ClickHouse Incorporated, there is work underway currently to bring PromQL support to ClickHouse. So you can just write PromQL queries. Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome? And then that opens up like even more integrations, right? Like, think about all the tools that integrate with PromQL. Then you can just use those with ClickHouse. Makes your Grafana dashboards easier. It makes Perse's integration possible. So this is really cool. Okay, another challenge with ClickHouse is that some people say that it can be overly complex for small data volumes. This bullet point comes more or less directly from the ClickHouse Inc. blog on observability with ClickHouse. I kind of disagree. I've spoken to we have some customers who are dealing with, you know, tens of gigabytes of data on ClickHouse. And because of all of those features that we were talking about, right, they find that it's worth it, even though they're not dealing with the scale that ClickHouse was sort of originally built for. So you can use this at any scale. And another thing I would say is, like, I've gotten 150 gigabytes of observability data out of like a demo running on a Raspberry Pi for a few days. So what is small, right? Everything's relative. And then one final challenge with ClickHouse, it's just a database, right? It's not a complete observability solution. It doesn't have any alerting. It doesn't have any visualization. It has integrations with all those things, and that's great. But by itself, it is by no means a turnkey solution. It's just a storage engine. We do need that, though, right? We need that for observability. We need both a database and a back-end UI of some kind. We need a complete observability solution, right? So here's kind of my simplified diagram of what a complete observability solution might look like. You've got your application SDKs, right? OpenTelemetry is awesome for that. You've got your host and node agents. OpenTelemetry is also awesome for that. Bela, which we just heard about, is awesome for that. Then you need some kind of collection sampling and processing. OpenTelemetry Collector is sort of the default choice for that. Just kind of makes sense. From there, you're going to go to maybe directly to your storage, or maybe you're going to use some kind of reverse proxy or gateway sitting in front of your storage that can help process the data, batch the data before it finally gets persisted. And then out of the storage, right, we need to have an analysis UI so our engineers can actually make use of the data. And maybe separately from that, we need something that's going to query the data on a, you know, ongoing basis, polling basis, and alert whenever there's something that violates one of our alert rules. So this is a more complete solution. How do we get to this with ClickHouse? Well, there are some open source projects making this possible already so that you can have a turnkey solution with ClickHouse under the hood. These are all really great projects, or you could build your own, right? We're working with some customers who are doing that. If you want to do that, we're here to help. But if you just want something that you can turn on and run, these are all pretty great choices. Two that I think maybe are less well-known are Koroot and Quarian, so I'm going to talk about those in a little bit more detail now with my last 10 minutes, and then we'll take some time for questions. So Koroot, and some of the creators of Koroot are here if you want to track them down and talk to them. It's a batteries included, no code observability solution. So here's a screenshot of sort of the dashboard, and we can see some, right, like some of those joins in your head that I was talking about earlier, we can kind of already see coming up in this, right? We're using all of those different signals to understand the health of these services. Whether we're getting that information from metrics about the, you know, RED metrics, whether we're getting it from tracing and upstream and downstream relationships, or whether we're getting it from explicit error messages in logs. Here we can see the topology that is generated by Koroot. It's kind of hard to see on this screen, I'm sorry. But this is, what's actually here is the OpenTelemetry demo project running in Docker on my laptop. I did not do anything, right? I cloned the repo and ran Docker compose up, and I ran the single Docker compose up command for Koroot. I didn't tell the OpenTelemetry collector built into the OTel demo project to export anything to Koroot, right? Koroot used eBPF, and it got all of these relationships using eBPF tracing. You can enrich this data, right? Koroot will allow you to point your collector and send your OpenTelemetry traces, and then you get all of that extra additional enrichment of the application context, which is awesome. But just out of the box, you get this. And you can even see traffic going to and from something like an OpenTelemetry collector or a node agent. So this is like really, really useful as a first step when you're setting up the rest of your observability pipeline. You can see everything that you expect to happen and everything that actually is happening with pure automatic instrumentation using eBPF. This is so awesome. And then we can use that information, right? Like I was talking about how we're combining all three signals in this screen. We can kind of see all, you can't quite see the logs, they're cut off at the bottom, right? But we can see that we're inferring the health both from the relationships that come from the traces, that topology that we generated from the traces, metrics, which could have been exported as aggregated metrics or could have been derived from traces or logs, right? And then the logs themselves. So it kind of brings it all together into one tool, all correlated around the entities, the resources, which are the things that I, as an engineer, can actually reason about and think about. Like, I understand what a node is. I understand, you know, my process running in the node, and that's usually the thing that I care about, not like a specific